This is the first week on this thing of wisdom. What is wisdom? What is it all about? Why is it important? Let's pray about that right now. God, I ask that you would use today as you see fit, and that we would see things that we hadn't seen before. And that seeing things that we hadn't seen before will lead to doing things that we maybe have never done before. Help me to see and sense what needs to be said today, and read where people are so that everybody senses like there's a customized word of wisdom for them. And I pray these things in your name. Amen. Webster defines wisdom as accumulated knowledge. Accumulated knowledge. And that is not the definition we're using for this series. Wisdom is not accumulated knowledge. We're looking at wisdom as a verb, not as accumulated knowledge. Wisdom is not Gnosticism. Gnosticism, the understanding that there is hidden knowledge that you need to attain in order to be close to God, in order to be wise. It's not Gnosticism. Wisdom isn't moralism. Understanding of strict do's or don'ts that applies to everybody in all situations. You know, we don't smoke, we don't chew, we don't date girls who do, the kind of thing. That may be good or bad, but moralism isn't wisdom. And there is a place for attaining knowledge. There's a place for having morals, a place for things like Ten Commandments. It's just that moralism is not wisdom. Don't we all know people that have a lot of knowledge, and yet they're not wise? I mean, don't we all know people who have PhDs and yet their life is a wreck? You know, their life, there's no heavy substance to it. Don't we all know people who are moralists that never break the Ten Commandments and always do everything according to book, and yet there's some lacking quality about their life, or our life maybe? Maybe we're like that, but there's some lacking quality about our life. There's a lack of connection, a lack of having a life that really amounts to something. It's not Gnosticism, it's not moralism, it's also not pragmatism. The idea that if I just do the right things will happen. If it was about pragmatism, then steroids would be wise. Take steroids and I jump higher and run faster. But no, there's something else in the longer view of things that we're looking at. Here's the way we're defining wisdom this series. Wisdom is seeing the pattern and following through. It's seeing the pattern and following through. I was playing chess yesterday. Any of you in the last year have played chess? I'm just curious. Last year, okay? Chess is, you know, pretty cool. I'm not that good. Here's my strategy. I hesitate to say my strategy. I think the person I played chess with is here today, and I don't want to tip off my strategy. But here's my basic strategy of chess. Have minimal defenses in the early stages and get your big pieces out as fast as possible to wreak havoc. That's my basic, and I don't know if that's good or not, but that's basically what I do. And I'm smart enough to be able to forecast forward two, maybe three moves, and then I just start getting a headache. If you're a chess master, you can forecast forward, if I do this and that person does this and this happens, and then you, like 10, 12 different moves if you're a chess master. I'm told that if you're a grandmaster, when you step back and you take a look at the board, you actually see a pattern emerge. You don't just forecast forward. There's actually a pattern that emerges from the board that then dictates the moves that you make and the things that you do and how you react to certain things. That's wisdom. When you're around long enough that you see something, that a pattern emerges and you just see it and you do it. And the longer you're around, the more likely that you're going to see patterns and pick up patterns. Just because you're old doesn't mean you're wise, but the wisest people do tend to be old because they've been around long enough to actually experience things and therefore see patterns that they can forecast for and then take the actual right step. Those of you who are young parents, if you've ever been a young parent, or if you are a young parent, you might have had the reaction that I've had when somebody who's older comes up and sees your kids when they're real little, and they go, "Oh, take advantage of time. They grow up so fast. They grow up so fast." And you're sitting there, at least if you're like me, I'm sitting there going, "I hope so. Please. Please. Oh, take advantage. Nurture every moment because they go old so fast." I'm like, That's what I'm hoping for. I don't want to wipe rear ends any longer. I don't want to play chutes and ladders any longer. I'm tired of the chutes and ladders. I want them to grow up so I don't have to do that deal. And, you know, being a taxi service, I want them to grow up. And then you have these moments where you realize the things that have been being said, there's actually some wisdom to it. A couple weeks ago, I was in my office and I just was looking up at my shelf and a number of things are on my shelf, and I took a look at this photo that was sitting there. It's a photo of my three kids about, oh man, I don't, okay, on three, everyone say, ah, oh, one, two, three, ah, yeah. Okay, there's this photo, that's, I don't know, gosh, 6 years old or so, seven, something like that. And I sat there and looked at that thing, and I burst into tears while sitting at my desk. I looked at that and I thought, I would give every last dollar I have to have 5 minutes on that back porch in that house. Every last dollar I have, I'll give it right now to have 5 minutes. Why is that? Because at this stage in life, when my kids were this age and that photo was being taken, I was there physically, but I wasn't there emotionally. I always took days off, had my regimented day off. I always watched my evening meeting schedule. Never had more than two or three meetings a week at night, even the worst, well, except for building campaigns or crazy campaigns. But just had those things. But when I was home, I wasn't home. I was thinking about the next message I had to give, and so I wasn't fully engaged. I was thinking about the latest staff challenges and the relationships that need to be nurtured on staff and the fallout from that, as opposed to thinking about the relationship with my kid. I was dealing with ego stuff of this feeling nice about myself, being a part of something that's bigger and growing and getting all kind of jollies out of that, as opposed to jollies out of building into what the moment was happening there. I was consumed with the latest challenge, the latest leadership challenge, and I was just thinking about it. I was there, but I was always thinking of those things. And those years were like a blur to me. And as I sat there and I looked at that picture and other similar events, all of a sudden, all those words of, oh, you know, they grew up so fast, all of a sudden, boom, I saw the pattern. Heard the words, saw the pattern. And in seeing that pattern, I've had a different mentality and attitude about things that I've done as a parent over the last several weeks that, you know, I did before. It's the pattern. It's a pattern, seeing it. The wisest person in the entire Bible, except for Jesus. Jesus is always a good answer for something like that. But the wisest person in the whole Bible is seen as King Solomon. I want to take a look at his story today, and we're going to refer to him over the next several weeks. King Solomon is the son of King David. David has been the warrior king, and Solomon now inherits one of the world's superpowers that's at a critical juncture. And as he inherits this role as king, as leader, he has this vision and this interaction with God, which is the genesis of him being a wise leader, a wise person. And here's what it says in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 3, verse 5. The Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream. And God said, ask whatever you want me to give to you. How good would that be? How good would it be if just God comes to you right now and says, hey, whatever you want, just name it. I'll give it to you. I mean, that'd be actually, like, for 3 seconds, tell the person next to you right now, and if you could have anything, God would give it to you. Tell them what it was right now. Just turn right beside you. What would it be? And don't try to make yourself look good either. Just say what you really would want. Okay, you know, some of us might have said, might have thought, man, I would want all the money in the world. Some of us might have said, I would want all the dates in the world. Some of us might have said, you know, I'd like to have all the physical ability in the world. I mean, we might have said any number of things. Here's what Solomon says. He said, Now, Lord God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, but I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this people of yours? Solomon says, I'm just not cut out for this. I'm not equipped. I can't take this task of leadership. I need to make decisions and to rule these people well, and they're your people and not my people. And so I would ask that you would give me wisdom. I would ask you to give me wisdom, and I would follow through on it. I would ask that you would enable me to see the pattern and to follow through on it. He doesn't ask for Gnosticism, just knowledge and knowledge. He doesn't ask for moralism, though he does have knowledge. He doesn't ask for moralism, have me to always do the right thing morally, though he doesn't do too bad at that at points in his life. He doesn't ask for pragmatism, just to do the right thing in that moment. A holistic, overarching view of running his life and running people. Verse 10, the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you have asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you've asked. I will give you wise and discerning heart so that there will never be anyone like you, nor will there ever be. God says, man, I'm impressed with this. This is awesome. Many people who are lesser people than you would have asked for money. Many people who are lesser than you would have just asked for all the publicity in the world. But you've asked for wisdom. And as a result of you being able to see patterns and follow through, as a natural result, you're going to have wealth. As a natural result, you're going to have an honor. When you have wisdom, there are great things that naturally flow from it. And here's how it continues. Moreover, I'll give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands, as David your father did, I will give you a long life. If you walk in obedience, if you follow through in the patterns that you see, if you do, I'll give you a long life. Solomon attains this wisdom, and the very next thing that happens in the Bible is he has a test to his wisdom. Two women come to him, two young mothers. Both of them have infant children. One of the infant children has died. And so the one mother says, this other woman, her child died and stole my child and put the dead child in my bed. And the other woman said, no, that's not the way it is. This is my child. Her child died. And so Solomon now has got to decide what to do with this family squabble, what to do with these children. And he sees the pattern, a pattern of immediately emerges before him, where he realizes that mothers that are true mothers care more about their child than they do about the role of motherhood. He sees that mothers, great moms, would rather have a life of a child than have the responsibilities and the role and the ID of motherhood. So he says, get me a sword. I'm going to solve this. I'll just take a sword. I'll slice this baby right in half, and each one of you can have half the baby. Everyone wins. And the real mother says, oh, no, that's okay. It's okay. Let her have the child. It's her child. And Solomon says, now I know that you're the real mom. Have your child and go away in peace. See, he sees the pattern. He's able to make the right decision. I struggled with whether or not to use Solomon on this, is this opening of this series, because Solomon is actually deviant to the mean. Solomon is not the way you and I are going to experience wisdom. Solomon asks for it from God, and God does, dumps it on him. But that's not the way it works with nearly every single person in the Bible. In fact, even Jesus himself, in Luke chapter 2, verse 47, it says that Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature. He actually grows in it. Wisdom is actually similar to this thing right here. How about this set? Are you digging this set? It's a cool set, huh? This was all constructed by volunteers, and I look at some of the things these dudes do. I'm like, man, I need to have them come over and work in my house. This is pretty awesome. And, you know, this initially was just sort of looking like a Zen garden, and this was tying these elements together, just totally cool. And when I took a look at what those folks constructed, I realized that unbeknownst to them, they had constructed the biblical metaphor for wisdom. Wisdom in the Bible is viewed as a path. Regularly viewed as a path. There's phrases like, you know, following the right paths, taking the right paths. He whose walk is blameless. Stay on the straight path. I mean, we've all heard the straight and narrow. These are biblical imagery of the path. And wisdom is like this. It's a path. It's a journey where as you go through life, you're able to see patterns, and if you see the patterns and follow through, you're okay. And even when you get off the path, if you fall off, falling off the path sometimes enables you to see a pattern and not repeat the same thing twice. Wisdom is a path. It's not a hatch. It's a path. It's not a door. It's a path. It's not a point. It's not something where all of a sudden, boom, you have it. It's something that you attain by being exposed to more and more patterns and seeing more and more things. My My mother was recently in her 50th high school class reunion. She told me that the person who's voted most likely to succeed is a recluse and an alcoholic and won't come out of her house and doesn't come to reunions and stuff like that. Most likely to succeed. I heard that and I thought, wow, that's interesting. I've noticed that people who I went to high school with, and I was relatively popular in high school, my friends, they kind of capped out in high school. Have you ever noticed this? It's like those who oftentimes are voted most likely to succeed or homecoming king or homecoming queen or everyone likes or the most popular, their apex is when they're 17. And then you go to a class reunion 20 years, you're like, ooh, man, what happened to you? Man. And then the people that we're referred to as the dweebs or people that, you know, didn't have the respect, they're the ones that have, like, lake homes. You ever notice that, you know? And first of all, before I give my opinion, has anybody ever noticed that pattern? Who else has noticed that pattern, okay? Now, this is people were clapping. It was people who were dweebs in high school. Yes, yes, that's right, that's right. Now wisdom, that's really bad. Wisdom and those proverbs we gave, proverbs are general rules of thumb. Okay, so this is generally true. It's not always true, but it's generally true. And this pattern is just there. Now, here's why I think that pattern is there. I think that pattern is there because you can get by on natural, God-given things until about the age 17. If you've got a naturally good-looking face, people will like you. If you've got a naturally physical body, you will excel in things, and your body looks good based on how God has endowed you with that body, not based on your own efforts. If you have a natural ability to retain information and you don't study much, you know, you're going to be okay. And all, they're just natural abilities. But then we get to a point in life where we've got to start developing some different skills, and our same abilities only get us so far, and people start passing us up who understand the work of discipline and doing the little things every day, taking the path of diligence every day to have a satisfaction from personal growth. It's just the pattern that's there. When you see that pattern, you recognize, okay, how does that apply to my life today? No matter what a success or effectiveness I'm having today, it will end if I don't understand the little steps that I need to take in diligence every single day. People oftentimes come to me and they want me as the pastor to be the moralistic police for them and tell them what is right and wrong on everything. You know, so come to me and say, well, how far is too far, you know, sexually? Or come and say, well, does God really care if there's these natural plants and it's inside of white papers that are rolled up? And, you know, and is there anything in the Bible that said, or how about alcohol? I mean, can I do some beers and all this kind of stuff? And sometimes there is a Ten Commandment kind of answer to those things. Other times there's not a Ten Commandment answer. Let's take alcohol, for instance. You could take a look at various verses in the Bible and you can see, well, it depends. It depends. Some people who are really into moralism would give you a very absolute, this is the way it always is, this is the way it always isn't, but, you know, it's really not the way it is. Should you have alcohol? No, it doesn't matter what the pattern is like. It doesn't matter. What's your family of origin like? The people in your family background that have been alcoholics? Because if so, there may be a genetic disposition that's passed on to you, and you may be more likely to it, and it might be affected by that. Well, first time you got drunk, have you ever gotten drunk? Did you black out? Did you black out and have no memories? The pattern of your life, when you do drink, if you do drink, can you stop? Can you go into a party and say, I'm going to have two drinks and that's it, and you stop all the time? Or do you not have control of it? Do you find that there's all kinds of things. There's just dozens and dozens of things. So when you see the pattern emerge for you, it tells you what is the wise thing. And what's wise for you, and alcohol might not be wise for me, what's wise for me might not be what is wise for you, but there's a pattern to that. This is the way life works. There's this path that as you go along the path, you can see things and things emerge that enable you to understand reality. To have wisdom, you've got to want it and you've got to walk in it. You've got to want it and you've got to walk in it. You've got to come to this place where you say, I want stuff that transcends who I am. I want the knowledge that transcends my natural abilities. I want it. God, I want to see patterns. I want to see it. James 1, chapter 5 says this. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. God says a prayer that I love to answer is when you ask for wisdom. And even though wisdom isn't a hatch, even though it's not something you accidentally fall into, ask for it. Maybe you are one of the rare ones. Maybe you are one of the 1 million that if you ask this prayer, God will supernaturally allow you to see patterns. But for the rest of us, when we ask for wisdom, we got to go around hard work. We got to do the hard work of learning and noticing things. One of the ways in which God gives us wisdom is by seeing his wisdom that's in this book, the Bible. And, you know, one of the things about this whole path is there are things, and this pattern is true in every single thing. Isn't there true that the things that are the most worthy in life, we only get after multiple steps? Isn't that true? Physical fitness, I'm not saying that's the most worthy, but that's a nice thing. Isn't it true that you only get physical fitness after multiple steps, like 3 times a week over several months or years, or 6 times or something like that? Isn't it true that like a great relationship, a great friendship, doesn't happen because you sat beside somebody in a movie? It's multiple steps of building into them and learning who they are. It's multiple stuff. And so when you want a great relationship with God, you cannot have a good relationship with God without reading this book. You can't. Now, I'm not saying moralism. Do this or God doesn't like you. I'm not saying moralism. I'm saying when you ask for wisdom, you want to know what God thinks about things and be able to see patterns. This is one of the ways in which he gives it. He has this one book in here that Solomon was primarily responsible for. It's the book of Proverbs. It's a bunch of easy one-hitters, easy one-liner hitters. If you've never read the Bible or you haven't for a while or you struggle with it, this little section of the Bible right here, this group of pages, easy read, easy read. Just take a couple minutes a day and read these. It's easy read. And let me show you how cool this is, because this is just a book of patterns, patterns that have been around forever, patterns that transcend your birth. Patterns have been there. And these patterns, these are general principles, because sometimes they might not apply to your specific situation. These are patterns. Let me just show you how this works. I'll do a little Bible roulette. This is interesting, yeah. I'll just, right here. Okay. Actually, you probably thought I was opening my eyes. I won't even open my eyes. Right here. Okay, let's see what this one. Oh, this is good. Proverbs 22, verse 10. Drive out the mocker and out goes strife. Quarrels and insults are ended. You know, some of us have relationships where we are with mockers. We are with people that are with us to validate themselves, and the way they are validated by finding out how they're right and we are wrong. And so when you make a decision, like God whispers something to you that you need to change about your life, and you decide to get on the path to righteousness, the path to what is right, the path of wisdom, they are not going to like it because you're not going to be on their path any longer, and they will mock you. They'll mock you. They will not support your decisions. They won't support your decisions as a 16-year-old to not drink any longer. They won't support your decisions to all of a sudden be thinking about the long view of what your sex life is going to do if you ever get married, as opposed to the gratification of the moment. And they will mock you. And you may come to a point where you realize, I can't have any more strife. This is bringing me strife, strife to my spiritual life, and this relationship must end. That's just one. Some of you are going, oh my goodness, that's like my life. Yeah, well, it's right here. It's right here. And this is the kind of stuff that happens when you ask. You want it. Do you want that? When you want it, then you have to actually walk in it. Want it and walk in it. When you see a pattern, when you notice something, you have to actually walk in it. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 25 to 27. Says, let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Make level paths for your feet. Here's this path thing. And take only ways that are firm. Do not swerve to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil. Have your eyes straight ahead. Fix your gaze on where you want to go and walk there. Actually, when you see something, when you see a pattern, when you see a pattern of where the path is going, walk there. And the further you walk and the closer you get, the more you'll understand it. I had a guy, after this last service came up, he was weeping. He was an older guy. And he said, I sat there and I kept thinking, you were going to say, wisdom is experience, wisdom is experience. I started getting mad until I realized it's not experience. It's allowing the experience to mold you and seeing the patterns. There's a lot of us who have experience, but we don't have wisdom because we've never seen the experience or the patterns that emerge out of our experience, and we never make any changes to our life. Just because you've had a bunch of crap happen to you doesn't make you wise. It's when you have it and you notice, oh, I'm not going to go there again. Not going to do that thing. I've told this story before, and excuse me if you've heard it before, but it applies to the wisdom thing. It's kind of Brian and his history with golf. Every spring for the last few years, I've thought, oh, maybe this is the year I start taking up golf again. Maybe this is the year I start taking up golf again. See, my history on golf is I used to be a golf addict. Used to love golf, always golfed, any spare moment, golf. And it worked out really well when you're single and you're young. And it especially works out really well when you got a lot of friends who are rich and have country club memberships. And they just allow you to go with them as often as they can, or their dads are rich, and allow them to pay for any guests that they want to go. And so you just go forever. And the greatest courses in Pittsburgh all the time for nothing. And you got time. You're just, oh, it was awesome. It was phenomenal. And then you get married. And you get married, and your first weekend after married, you say to your wife, hey, I'm going to go golf. And she says, okay, good. Because her dad Liv's dad didn't golf. So she had no understanding of the pattern of golf. She understand that. She thought golf was like bowling a few frames, we're back in a couple hours. No, the pattern of golf is, for me, I like to walk. I like to think about my next shot. I like to take about 5 hours to walk a nice 18-hole course and really do well. And I like to do a 19th hole and you be there and for another hour, debrief, talk. Then, you know. So 6 hours later, I come home and dinner is cold on the table. Cold, bone cold. And my wife is cold too. Very, very, very cold, and just didn't understand that pattern. So next week I go golfing. This time, at least this time, she understands exactly what's going to happen. And this time I find myself on hole 15 starting to run, carry my bag, going shot to shot. I am running shot to shot to get home. Not because I don't want to make her unhappy, because she's very grace-giving. And she says, yeah, that's fine. We'll make that work if that's important to you. But I started to run because there was a pattern that was emerging that I noticed. See, there's this weird thing. At that time, I was in student ministry. I was working with kids all the time. And I saw dads of many of the kids that were golf addicts. Or if they weren't golf addicts, they were addicts to their career advancement. Or they were addicts to whatever. And they were on the course all weekend, every weekend, golf leagues in the evening and all that stuff. And at the same time, I noticed that with some of these dads. I noticed that these daughters tended in my student ministry to be the most promiscuous. They tended to be the ones that always had a boyfriend. Always. Every time a relationship ended, it's because they had another one lined up. They were just overlapped. Always lined up. Always there. And I noticed this. And you might be saying, now hold on, Brian, what in the world does golf and girls who always have boyfriends and are promiscuous have to do? What in the world does that? Well, I've seen the pattern. This is the pattern. The pattern is that girls need and want male affection and affirmation. And the greatest source for that in the younger years is a dad. And when a dad is around and affectionate and affirming, there's less of a need to get that affection or affirmation from a boy who's 15, 16, 17. And there's also less of a temptation to put out sexually what that person wants to retain that person, because you're afraid they might actually walk on you. Now, some of you are sitting here right now, you're like older dads, or you're like 25 years old, and you're sitting here going, oh my goodness. Like your whole life is flashing before your eyes right now. I'm really not trying to bum you out. I'm really not trying to, I'm just going, that's a pattern I've seen. And again, not everybody who golfs that happens. Not everybody who's, and I'm not doing that. All I'm saying is this. When you see a pattern, you say to yourself, all right, based on who I am, where I've been, where I want to go, the preferred future, what is the wise thing for me? I'm not saying you shouldn't golf. Some of you are like, I'm not saying you shouldn't golf. I'm not saying you shouldn't golf if you don't have kids. I'm not saying that. See, this is what is called wisdom. What's wise for me might not be wise for you. What's wise for you might not be wise for me. This is why it's a path. This is why you gotta want it. This is why this isn't easy tit for tat moralism, easy just accumulate knowledge and sound impressive when you're at cocktail parties, easy do whatever you need to do to drive up your earnings the next quarter. Those are simple things. This wisdom thing, this is a lifelong journey. Now, Solomon, the fascinating thing about him is he lost it. He lost it. He had this wisdom, but he didn't walk in it. He had some major issues in his life, one of them being women. He had hundreds of women in his life, hundreds. Now, later on in Israel's history, God gets very clear, and he talks to them. He says, in order to maintain your spiritual purity and your relationship with me, don't have a significant relationship with anybody who is in the same place as you are spiritually. Just don't do it. He says that very, very much later on. It's still, that's actually kind of a moralism if you're a follower of Christ. There's the value for moralism. If you're a follower of Jesus, never be serious with somebody who isn't, because you will both get hurt. You just will. That's just the pattern. It's just the pattern. But Solomon, God hasn't been that clear with him on it, and so he's got hundreds of wives, and the way he forms national allegiances. He marries like the sheik's daughter. Marries the Pharaoh's daughter, so they're kind of, and it seemed like, oh, that seems like pragmatic, works, but it really doesn't. Because then, all these pagan religions, child sacrifice, and building monuments on hills, and worshiping the sun instead of worshiping the God that's done things in their life, all these unhealthy things start infiltrating into the nation of Israel's relationship with God. And by the end of Solomon's reign, this united superpower is divided. It's divided. There's a northern kingdom, there's a southern kingdom, and their best days are behind them, and they never regain those days again. Because he didn't walk in wisdom. There was an area in his life where he didn't see a pattern and forecast it forward and do the right thing. And that's what I want for all of us this series. Last week we had this adrenaline surge, kind of spiritual estrogen, testosterone, everything like that at the end of the service. Where this curtain opens, this word frees up here, and many of us, hundreds of us, went and painted up there signifying, I have received Jesus in my life, or I have, and I've walked from him, and I want to be connected. And it was just this, one of those things where you just, And I had a friend of mine who I saw in here, this service I think it was last week, and he was without his wife, and I said, where's your wife? Well, she's homesick. And his wife called me couple days later and said, oh, that was so great. I said, I thought that you were sick and you weren't there. She said, well, Paul walked out of the service and he called me up and said, I don't care if you're sick or not, take your germs to church. You've got to get there. I'll come home right now and take care of kids. You got to get there. And she said, I sat there and I just wept the whole time, because it was a payoff. It was a payoff for why we sacrifice like we do around here, the payoff for why we volunteer all that we do, why we make all the financial sacrifices that we do. And she just was basking in that. And I reflected on that and I thought, there's times when that happens in a place like this where it's like a hatch where God just opens up and stuff just dumps on us in this room and powerful things happen. And maybe that'll happen this series. That'd be great if it happens, but it's probably not going to, because wisdom doesn't work that way. This series will work for you if you see some pattern, God quickens some pattern in your mind, in your heart. And if you walk out of here and you take a step, if you want it and you walk in it, God, and I'm asking that happens. I'd love for you to open up a hatch and amazing Solomon-like wisdom dump on a few people in here. That'd be great if you would do that. I ask for it. Do it. Please. I also know that your history shows that you tend to not work that way. You value the role of process and growth and the path. You value the path. And so if you've impressed a pattern on any of us in here, help us to be verb-like and walk in it as we leave. In your name I pray. Amen.
As I espy the verdant greens of nature and see in souls thy hand, consider thee in all thy greatness, I must confess, O God, I am afraid. Aid me, O God, in knowing my own station. Assist me in submitting to your hand, and
soon. Would you please stand up and we'll try to a little more of this song.
Teach me my days to number them aright. Instruct my heart to wisely. Right.